Hi, welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the video podcast. Woohoo! We're finally a video podcast. It's taken a long time. And based on the fact that the audio hasn't run smoothly for nearly 12 months, throwing video in seemed like a bit of a fool's errand. But we're going for it tonight. We're going to be a video podcast from now on. How are you doing, everybody? We've got the fantastic panel here to talk about the week in tech news. Starting off, top left corner with Mr. Barry Collins from PC Pro Mate. How's it going?
It's going very well, Ewan. If I'd known you were going video, I would have got rid of these 80s headphones and got something more stylish.
You have got one of the baddest set of earphones going, mate. They are superb.
I got these when I was at the Sunny Times in about 10, 11 years ago. And even then, people were looking at me going, they're a little bit on the large side.
They look like the set that my cousin had in 1972, mate. Listening to Tubular Bells.
Yes. Walkman.
And Bread. How's life at PC Pro?
It's very well. We're going very well. We put one to bed last night, in fact, very late last night. So if I start nodding off halfway through, I apologise. I've also had my 7-year-old daughter's birthday party today. So I've had 37-year-olds running around on top of a late night. So, lovely. If I'm still awake in half an hour's time.
When can we expect it on the stands?
It's on the stands. Now you put me on the spot. It's on the stands in about 2 weeks' time, Thursday week.
Well, they take their time then.
Yeah, it takes a fair while, and then we give subscribers about a week earlier than the newsstand. So it takes a week to print, and subscribers get a week.
All the more reason to subscribe and pay less as well, no doubt.
Absolutely.
Good man. Next to him, we've got Mike Hurley from The Bro Show, the podcasting project. How's it going, mate?
Very good, my man. How are you?
Yeah, long time no see.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back. I've had a crazy few weeks.
Under the thumb of the girlfriend.
I wouldn't say that.
House hunting? No?
Well, yeah, kind of. We're looking at stuff.
The look of horror on your face then, mate. Mm. That look was like, horrible, really? Am I?
It's a horrible... At first, I thought you said, how is hunting?
Oh, like, right. I don't hunt.
I wouldn't know, my friend.
Fox hunting. I could just see you in a red tunic and a post horn, mate.
Yeah, well, it's just, the glorious 12th wasn't long ago.
No, grouses. And grouse, there's no houses, is there? And Sarah, the dulcet tones from Essex, standing in at the last minute, having not read any of the stories for James Hart, who's not well this evening, unfortunately.
Yeah, poor James.
He's in a bad way. How prepped are you feeling then?
Not too bad, actually.
All right, okay.
Had a couple of hours' notice, so it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, you nearly had a lot less notice because I tweeted out the wrong bloody time like an arse.
Yeah, that caught me on the hop a bit.
Thank you for pointing that out. Otherwise, I'd have been sat around 9 going, where the bloody hell is everyone? And last but by no means least, Mr. Eric Lanigan from Petaluma.
Hey, guys.
You got out alive from Tech Talk Back then? No? Hmm? You haven't done Tech Talk Back yet?
I'm actually going in for training later tonight with Jammer B. So hopefully that'll get up and going pretty soon.
How long have you had off now? A month?
I don't know. I don't feel like I have time off. I mean, I've just been sitting here doing like all kinds of shows and like all kinds of work. So
spreading yourself around.
Yeah.
Good week.
Yeah, I would say so. Same old thing.
Same old, same old. Week in technology, what's happened? Well, some woman managed to get hold of a stolen laptop at a car boot sale. And she took pictures of herself with nothing on to send to her boyfriend. And the firm that did the tracking software took the pictures and used them in court in evidence. And she's now suing the firm. The fact that she only paid $60 for the PC should have given her a bit of a heads up. Apple have lost another iPhone prototype. Guess where?
Tequila.
In a bar. In a Mexican restaurant. So they're obviously, I mean, I want to go and work at Apple now. They're obviously serious drinkers.
Cupertino is not handle their drink very well.
Now that Pius Steve's gone, they're all gone crazy with the alcohol. And Domino's have said that they want to have a pizza shack on the moon. They've estimated the costs. And Domino's have estimated that the total cost will be 1.67 trillion yen to set up the first shop on the moon. That's $21.7 billion, and they've decided they're going to start putting money aside for it, saving up for it.
I can't imagine that doing anything other than great profits because of all the people that visit.
It's got a huge foot traffic, hasn't it? Definitely. Well, if you believe 18, is it Apollo 18? It's good. There's a customer base there, definitely. And apparently Pizza Hut have already delivered though to the space station, so they're not the first in space with pizzas, which has got to hit hard.
They've delivered to the space station.
Yeah, Pizza Hut delivered a pizza to the space station in 2001.
How did they do that? A big slingshot.
Well, I bet the 30-minute guarantee wasn't on it, though.
No.
No. And finally, the HP Pre 3 has been released in UK today. If you want one, you can go and get one from the Carphone warehouse.
I might buy one. It's like 40 quid, isn't it?
Don't think I'll bother this time.
The deal is super cheap, unquote. £69 for the top smartphone available, and it's SIM-free at £69 as well. So,
69 quid? What is wrong with
HP? I heard 49.
Well, I'm going down to Carphone Warehouse tomorrow. Apparently, you can get a plan for it for £10.50 a month on Vodafone. Pay as you go
on their
as
website.
Well.
Why would you go pay as you go when it's 69 quid up front? You'd have to be mad.
Exactly. Yeah. You just go and get SIM only deal for 12 months. You're not tied in for 2 years then either as well. So, because it's obviously a subsidised phone. SIM free at 69 quid.
What is wrong with HP? They've gone absolutely tonto. I've never seen a company that was so staid and sensible just utterly lose it in the process of a fortnight. Well,
the thing that got me, if we're going to talk about HP, which we weren't, yeah. But did you see that they on Monday, they well, no, we're very serious about the tablet market. Oh, yeah, very important to us. Hugely
all
important
over
to
the
us.
Place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. God, no. Step out of the tablet market, never.
I like that with PCs as well. Last week, the guy from the UK came out and said, hey, no one said we're pulling out of the PC market. Don't ignore all that fuss that was last week. And then a day later, the Americans came out and said, yeah, we're still selling off the PC division. That's still our preferred choice. It's like left doesn't know what the right's doing.
Well, it's like Apothic's gone to... He's like Lee Marvin out of Paint Your Wagon. He's one of those blokes that talks utter and common sense for a long period of time and then gets his hands on a bottle of whiskey and that's it. You can't tell what's coming out of his mouth next.
So they've decided they're going to, that in Q4 of this year, they're going to be producing more touchpads.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another 500,000 or something due in as well, isn't there? So.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy.
I tell you what, the PR agency that are handling HP must wonder what the hell they're on.
Talk about goalposts moving.
I think you know, from what I've seen and what kind of makes sense to me, they're producing these, the next run of touchpads, just so they can free up the supply chains that they built up.
Right.
So they've got all these suppliers that have gone absolutely crazy because they've got, you know, all this stock ready to make touchpads with, and then HP turn around and be like, yeah, we're not making that anymore without telling any of them.
Go on, Eric, you're about to say.
Oh, they're you know how much they're losing on each one of them, according to iSupply. It's like $207 each is just lost. That's below parts and manufacturing cost. That's a lot of money to lose just to make new tablets to lose that much money.
And what are they gaining? It's what I don't understand. It's not really great PR to say we can only succeed when we sell stuff massively below cost. I don't know why they didn't just throw it all into a big skip. It's just craziness.
Yeah, and what amuses me is how many people are legitimately saying, well, maybe they found the right price point now. Maybe that was the right price point all along. Yeah, 80% below, 80% liquidation sale is always the right price. $207 below cost of manufacturing is always the right price. So it's crazy that people actually think they've like stumbled on some brilliant marketing revelation.
Yeah, $10 would have been fantastic as well.
Exactly.
What I love it, I'm just on Carphone Warehouse's website here, and they've got the Pre 3 up, and there's a button on it that says, do you want to compare this phone with others? Well, 69 quid, no. What the hell am I going to compare it with? View all deals, here we go, hang on.
Yeah, it's like
you compare by price range and showing you like Motorola StarTax.
Yeah.
Not
click on all deals and nothing's happening. Hang on, here we go. Where's the SIM-free option? There's no SIM-free option.
No, there isn't at the moment. But there is a deal. You can get it for £135 for a like £20 a month contract, if you like, for some crazy reason.
Right. If you want it subsidised on Vodafone, you can have it with a 24-month binding contract and get 100 minutes anytime, any network, 500 texts, 250 megabytes of data. And it's going to cost you £20.50 a month. And the phone's going to cost you 150 quid to buy. And you could see some sucker tomorrow going in and buying that.
They're like, ooh.
And like, no, seriously? There you go, bottom deal, right at the bottom there.
Well, when the original Palm Pre came out over here, I bought it on the day it came out and it cost still, I still had to pay 90 quid for the phone.
Really?
Yes.
And that was a turd. I mean, that Palm, that Pre one really was the definition of bad phone, wasn't it?
I know, they saw me coming.
I mean, it looks nice, and this one looks significantly thinner than the other one.
Yeah, I've still got it hanging around somewhere.
And it's a Henry Ford, isn't it? You can have it in any colour as long as it's black.
As long as it's black, yeah.
Which is all rubbish. I know he never said that, but there we go. Right, do you want to do any serious news or not? IFA kicked off this week. What does IFA stand for?
International
Independent Financial Advisor.
Financial Advisor, yeah. International Funkelstrandbug Berlin.
That sounds
there's
a lot more
in there
fun.
At all.
It's Internationale Funkausstellung. There you go.
Okay.
That's where the FA comes from. I don't know what Funkausstellung means.
It sounds rude.
Well, it sounds like a band, doesn't it? Like a crap 80s music band. But what have they done? So far, we've had fantastic releases from Sony. Samsung did the commercial vomit today and spewed up everything that they could possibly imagine, including some really nice cameras, which we're going to talk about on the photo show tomorrow. Where should we start? Sony tablet? You've headlined this one, haven't you, a little bit, Barry? You've put it out on the website today.
The Sony tablet, yeah, the S. Well, there's two. There's the S and the, is it the P? God, S and the P. So the S is a fairly standard sort of tablet design. Although it's asymmetric, so it's sort of thicker at one end and thinner at the other, and the idea of making it is easier to type if you lay it flat on the desk, which is slightly odd, but it's not as odd as the other one. The P is like a clamshell design, a bit like, do you remember that the Sony P series computer they released a while back, about 2 years ago? It was a tiny little full Windows PC with a proper keyboard. That they claimed you could slip into your pocket. And it was about 800 quid, and I suspect they sold about six of them. But they don't seem to have given up on that idea, so they've now got a dual-screen tablet to go with it.
No one's laid their hands on one of these, I take it.
We got a guy out at IFA, and he's had a quick play with the S series. It's a fairly nice tablet from what I can see. It's got a couple of nice features, though. One, they've built in an infrared controller into it, so you can turn it into a remote control for your television, and unusually for Sony, not just Sony televisions, it apparently it works with pretty much any TV, which is a really nice feature, because most people with tablets just sit in front of the TV bitching about the X Factor most of the time, so it's a nice added feature.
No generalizations on this show.
And the other one it does quite nicely is apparently you can just flick video to your big TV screen. So if you're watching a YouTube video, you just literally flick the tablet, and it wirelessly pings onto your big screen. So at least they're trying to innovate a bit.
I have a picture of a girl flicking as we speak. There we go. She's flicking something on and watching. She's controlling YouTube as well. Now, YouTube, Samsung released a thing that said that they controlled YouTube videos in 3D. So obviously,
really?
Yeah, 3D videos are coming to YouTube. Anyone hear that?
Well, actually, they already are. If you're a person who had one of the rare people on Earth who has a 3D camera, you can upload and tag 3D video. And then YouTube will turn it into not an optically 3D one, but it's a, what do you call it when it's the red and blue?
Right.
And yeah, it's that. It's whatever that's called, whose name I'm forgetting.
I mean, they've got...
That's actually... Sorry?
They've got a really nice picture on the Engadget story of one of their nice TVs, the flat ones. And I've seen the Samsung flat ones down at Costco, and they are stunning, stunning televisions. The crystal, the pictures are crystal clear. So I can imagine if you've got 3D on a 60-inch one of these, it's going to look pretty hot. Even if it's YouTube.
Yeah, I'm not really taking my 3D at all. I've got to say, it does absolutely nothing for me. It leaves me absolutely cold. But some people like it.
No, I'm not a lover either, but there you go. What else did they do? They did the camera, they did the 3D for that, and...
Oh, they've got the new little Galaxy Note.
Yeah, they've got... well, what was the Galaxy line? They started off with the Galaxy Tab 7.7.
Yeah, oh, I actually forgot to look at that one.
Yeah, the 7.7, 7-inch tab. It's Galaxy Note. It's got us really excited. The device's latest entry in Samsung's probably Android Galaxy line. And it's got Sumi written all over it.
I think that they've literally just thought to themselves, none of our tablets have taken off. Why don't we release every possible size and form factor we can and just pray that someone will buy them?
Yeah, that is what they've done. Is it's just been scattershot for everyone, really. I mean, look at LG. Even made it was like those tablets that it had it could shoot in 3D, a 3D camera tablet. I mean, they don't know what's going to sell these things. But it's funny. Did you notice with the Galaxy Note, the little one? It looks here Apple is suing them because supposedly they rip off the designs of their iPhones that have been released. It looks like they actually ripped off the design of the Photoshopped fake rumored prototype of the iPhone 5 with that screen that goes all the way out to the edge. Did anyone else pick up on that?
I must admit, when I looked at it, I thought that does look like it's been Photoshopped.
Yeah. If you can picture what images I'm talking about, where it's like it's basically an iPhone 4, but with the screen extended all the way out and all the way up.
I don't think you need to, Eric. It actually looks like a Photoshopped image.
Yeah, it does. So I think it might have promised, though. I think that's an interesting... Nope.
Go ahead, Barry.
Sorry, I was just going to say, is the Note running Honeycomb, or is it on just Android smartphone software?
That one's going to be Android 2.3.
So it's gingerbread.
Okay. So they don't think it's a tablet as such. They think it's a sort of super-sized smartphone, which is interesting.
Well, from their video, it looks like they think it's going to be the next Palm Pilot. They're showing heavy usage of a stylus, which I think is interesting. I think the market isn't closed off to the reintroduction of the stylus. What do you guys think?
I thought for a second there you were going to say it was the next Palm Pre. There's a picture of it. I mean, it looks really nice. I've got to say that the iPhone for me, I'm finding the screen increasingly more frustrating. And seeing it as too small. I mean, I'd love to see a 4-plus-inch iPhone come in the next iteration. That would be superb, but I don't know that they ever will.
I think it's interesting for a portable digital assistant size because, I mean, just by looking at the video, it looks like it's more approximately the size of what the old personal organizers were, which is just barely small enough to fit in a large pocket. But if you think about it, phones, the screens are often too small to get real like productivity done. And
especially
iPad,
when you've got a soft keyboard as well.
Exactly. And the iPad you can't keep in your pocket. So and it's an interesting take as well, because what do we keep hearing from Apple, right? That you have to have big finger pushable buttons on a touch-based device. You can't have these little fine motor skill things, the precision pointing that you have with a mouse. But a stylus can handle that. And then they show in their introductory video, or the little sizzle video, people going through and changing their address book and modifying photos and things with a very, dense user interface that's more like the old style personal organizer. What do you guys think of the stylus? Do you laugh at that, or do you think maybe that could make a comeback?
Well, I got a stylus sent to me a couple of weeks ago for the iPad. And actually, I really enjoy using the iPad with a stylus, even a device that big. And I think it would be perfect for me if I could find a stylus with a thin nib that would allow you to actually write and take notes on an iPad-sized device. But the problem with most of the styluses I find, especially for the iPad, is they're like marker pen-sized nibs on them. And it feels like, you know, you're six again and scribbling on this huge text onto like a sheet of A4.
Well, there was an application and tablet pen that was floated as one of the potential devices that was coming about 6 months ago. And it had a very thin nib and it was pressure sensitive as well, so it flexed, and the application reckoned it had touch sensitivity on the iPad, so you could get brush strokes and you could accentuate and that kind of stuff. But it wasn't going to be like it was for brushing. It wasn't meant to be like a fine HB pencil or anything like that.
Well, that's a shame. I mean, I hear there's a couple out there, so I'm trying to hunt them down at the moment. But I agree. I think the stylus is actually quite useful. I'm not so sure on a device as small as the Samsung, because I think it still wouldn't allow you to take notes, or very many notes. And obviously, being a journalist, I want to be able to go out with my iPad or whatever, jot the notes down, whack them into some OCR software, and with a bit of luck, get the text out without having to just transcribe them all the time. I'm not sure I'd want to do that on a 5-inch screen.
I think it has to be like quite thick at the base because it has to be capacitive. I don't think you could have a thin like a thin nibbed stylus on an iPad, because it has to have that like rubber ball at the end for it to pick up the capacitive touch.
I'm a little intrigued, Barry, that you say a stylus is more useful on a larger screen than a smaller screen.
Well, I just for writing notes, certainly, but actually for just tapping around. I mean, you say about the small buttons point, but actually when you're on website and links, even with your fingers on an iPad screen, you do occasionally mispress the link, especially the sort of an in-text link. With a stylus, it's actually much easier. And I actually found using the keyboard much easier with a stylus. There's no sort of fat fingers of pressing the wrong key. You were much more precise.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I used to have a HP iPad. Before I had my Palm Pre, and for us using a software keyboard, it's a lot easier if you're trying to take notes when you're using a stylus than it is using either a soft keyboard or a miniature keyboard as you get on phones.
Well, there's some comments in the chat room here about the Dell Streak and saying at 5 inches, the reason it failed was because of the form factor. I mean, is the 7 going to fail just as quickly? You know, it wasn't a phone, it wasn't a pad. It was neither between the two. But there's other comments here saying, well, I go into meetings with an iPad and I feel like a bit of a dick carrying it around. I'd be quite happy with something a bit smaller at 7.
I don't think 7s are going to really be mainstream. I don't think you really want anything smaller than an iPad for most things. That includes note-taking, game playing, web browsing. 7 is just a weird middleman between doesn't quite fit in your pocket and is too small to be worth carrying around it separately.
Yeah. I mean, does the stylus make the difference, though, is my point. You know, would a stylus create an opportunity with 5, or would the stylus create an opportunity with 7?
I think you could probably just about get away with it without on a 7. But anything that's 5 or less, definitely, in my view, certainly from my experience, I think benefits from having a stylus. I'd love to have one for my Nexus S. That would complete it in terms of using it as a device for actually taking notes. I'm sure if you're taking notes like Barry does, it probably wouldn't be good enough. But I always found that having a stylus was actually innate, was good enough for taking notes during a meeting and things like that.
Right.
You then have to come back to something like graffiti. I don't think that's ever going to come back again. I think that was a sort of phenomenon from the 90s. The problem for me with 5 and 7 inches is they fall between two stools. They're too big a smartphone. You can't quite get them into your pocket. And they're not quite useful enough as a 10-inch iPad-sized tablets.
Mm. So what's the thumbs up, thumbs down on the Samsung 7.7?
I just think that trying to get ahead in the tablet wars is not just making different sizes. You've got to give something more than just this is a different screen size.
Yeah.
Go on, Eric, you're about to say something.
However, in that's true, but in that world where that's currently the case, where it is just a different screen size, I think Samsung has been the only really successful tablet manufacturer to compete with Apple. I mean, they've had the first Galaxy Tab was quite popular, at least among geeks. Their phones have been among the most popular compared with like HTC is like maybe the second in the running. I think there's a lot of potential there, more so than an HTC or LG or any of these other tablets we've seen. Vizio, a lot that have even yet to come out are still vaporware. Even Sony, I think, they're probably going to come in at too high a price or something. I think if Samsung seems the best positioned right now to compete on making the best hardware to compete with the iPad.
Hmm.
Sadly, yes.
And they're tied up in litigation.
Exactly. I mean, that's why they're tied up in litigation, because Apple sees the threat. I agree, Samsung has been far ahead of all of the other tablet makers so far. I'm not convinced by the 7, I've got to say. But, you know, I think of all of them, Samsung's nailed it so far.
Right.
Well, they're the nearest to Apple. I don't necessarily think they've nailed it.
They're currently the best Android implementation by a long way.
Yes, I'd agree with that.
Right, we've had a bit of a problem with audio in the chat room, and thankfully Joe's in the chat room who helped me set up the computer yesterday, and has correctly identified that it's the it's wanting to record the audio. So I do apologise if you've had a bit of feedback in the chat room. It should be gone now. Barry's also blinking in and out because he's on a Wi-Fi, I'm guessing, not wired connection.
Yeah, sorry.
It's all right, mate. Don't worry. There's worse happened on this show. there's been a bit of a ruckus over your neck of the woods then on AT&T, Eric. Indeed. I mean, you asked to talk about this story, and we're all Brits here, so we haven't really done the AT&T thing, so we're going to need some filling in here. What's the long and the short of what's happened?
Well, for a while there were so many groups and random people coming out in support of the merger of AT&T buying T-Mobile that a lot of people thought it was a sure thing. So it was a little bit surprising yesterday when the Department of Justice filed a lawsuit saying, an antitrust lawsuit, saying that if this merger goes through, it would be anti-competitive, it would be in the worst interests of the public and business and everything. And so they said it's a no-go. AT&T and T-Mobile are going to appeal that and try to make it continue to go through. But a lot of reports say that if the DOJ steps in and says no, then they mean no, and the FCC is probably going to say no, which is clearly a good thing. You know, we've had a few months, I think, to mention why better competition in cell phone services is better. And even Sprint kept coming out and saying that they are opposed to the merger because I think they agree that with everyone else analyzing that if T-Mobile gets bought up by AT&T, Sprint will get bought up by Verizon. And the United States will be left with two cell phone carriers controlling over 80% of the market. Mm. And like all the 100% of the nation's 4G coverage, you know, at that point, leaving only a couple of rural carriers that make up less than like, you know, 10% and have no data services. So that's apparently a no-go, which means that AT&T is going to have to pay up to $7 billion to Deutsche Telekom for the deal going through. That was their, what would you call it? Their consolation, or if it didn't go through,
yeah,
they agreed to pay them that.
They've got a penalty clause.
Yeah, yeah. And the funny thing is that a document was leaked by the law firm representing AT&T. A letter was leaked that showed that all this talk AT&T was saying about why this $40 billion purchase, or like I think it was $39 billion they wanted to buy they wanted to put up for T-Mobile, that would be necessary for them to expand their LTE coverage from 80 to 97% of the country. And then this document was leaked that shows that the cost of them to build out their own network to go from 80 to 97% coverage, 4G, would be $4 billion. So 10 times more to buy T-Mobile. And there was another document or something like that too that made the people looking at this situation say there's really no possible way this could be good for competition or create jobs or any of the things that they're claiming. So I think this is a really good thing that that it was blocked, and I hope it stays blocked.
I mean, was this a straight acquisition there? I mean, are you saying that the two of them combined is 80% of the phone market in the States? No.
No, Verizon and AT&T would be 80%. Let me go back. Actually, I've got a good chart I could pull up. But AT&T and Verizon right now control about 30%. And then you've got just the miscellaneous category that's like, they're all throwing in there at like 10% or 20%. Yeah. So if Sprint, T-Mobile's like 10 or 15 or something, or 12, and Sprint's 12 or something. So if those two are bought by the other two big ones, you'd be left with 80% of being only two companies.
So what the issue here is AT&T getting ahead of the others in some form, because there's no other big enough player to buy to equal it for Verizon.
No, there is. What I'm saying is we have basically four major carriers right now: Sprint, T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T. Based on the, and the mergers would happen based on their cellular frequencies, right? AT&T and T-Mobile use GSM, Sprint and Verizon use CDMA. So naturally those two could only merge with the other two. That's why that would happen. And so with T-Mobile out of the picture, then Sprint wouldn't be able to compete with those, with a larger AT&T like that. They're really struggling. So it's predicted that Verizon would almost certainly buy Sprint at that point.
Right. But they have no choice.
Pretty much.
Well, Mintz is quite an interesting one for us over this side of the pond, because T-Mobile's a huge provider over here. So have we just got an injection of $7 billion worth of cash into the European market, effectively?
Being
a German firm.
No, I think that if the acquisition is just for the American arm.
Well, bear in mind, T-Mobile and Orange over here have merged. So they've effectively done what... was happening in the US, although not quite to the same scale of dominance. But that merged company called Everything Everywhere, I believe it is, which is a great name. That really is a dominant player over here now.
I mean, has that definitely gone through, or are they still in the negotiation?
Yeah, no, that exists. Like, if you go to an Orange or T-Mobile shop, there will be something in the window that says a branch of Everything Everywhere.
Right. Okay. I've seen the logos.
Technically, isn't everything?
No, and they're not everywhere either. But
that's it. Yeah. What's your coverage? And they go 92%. Well, then there you go.
Maybe they're hoping that two wrongs will make a right.
Advertising Standards Authority will be involved.
Yes. If only.
Did we see Windows 8 menu?
I'm still recovering.
You're recovering. Why?
My eyes.
What, because you had to look at a window screen?
Well, just the amount of horrific options in the Windows Explorer. It's just so bad. I honestly don't know what they're thinking.
The interesting thing in this is, I saw a tweet earlier today, and I saw the tweet say Windows 8 have copied Apple's monochrome logos, and it looks just the same. And first time I've seen a picture of it is this evening just before the show. And I'm sitting looking at it going, what? it's nothing like anything that Apple's ever done.
No, I mean, looking at it, they've got the standard ribbon from Office 2010. And the bottom half of, talking about Windows Explorer here, and the rest of it looks just like it does in Windows 7. So
are we talking about Windows? Are we talking about Explorer or the start menu?
Explorer.
Oh, I'm talking about Windows 8 start menu.
Yeah, the start menu, they've sort of stripped all the color out, and people are saying that's like Apple. But the Explorer is just an absolute abomination.
I think it's clearly Apple fanboys saying that it's like Apple, because when I look at the start menu, I say, well, that's Windows Phone 7, or that's their Metro UI.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So it's people just going, Sue, have them. Go on, Tim.
I really don't think Apple would sue Microsoft for passing off. I think that would be an absolute insult for them. I think that's the last thing they would do.
I mean, there was an awful lot of stuff came out the other week about, it was several months back, you know, with this little preview hint of what Windows 8 is going to be and can do. And we were all sitting rather impressed by it. I think you were on that show, actually, Barry.
Yeah. The thing with Windows 8 is this whole merger of tablet, laptop and PC. And it does look good. The tablet UI looks nice. But then you press a button and it pops you back into old Windows. And that's exactly what we're seeing now with the Explorer screens that were released this week. They are desktop screens. And you've got these tiny little buttons, exactly as they are currently in the ribbon, in products like Office and Paint and WordPad on Windows 7, the built-in apps in Windows 7. And they're fine when using a mouse. They're no good when you're trying to prod them with a finger on a screen.
Mm.
So I'm beginning to fear for this sort of everything Windows that's going to be all encompassing and cover tablets and laptops, because I just don't think it's possible.
Did you see the story that Redmond's got a real problem with the vodka flowing, unquote?
This is in the UK, wasn't it? Wasn't this some kind of tribunal that's going on right now?
Yeah, apparently there was a whole pile of things going on about this. The vodka flows pretty well, apparently, for Microsoft. But I didn't read an awful lot more than that. It's one of those headlines that just sort of caught my attention, but why wouldn't it? But a bit of debauchery.
Yeah, it was sent through an unfair dismissal case where the guy was arguing that it was all a bit... how can I put this without invoking lawyers in a currently ongoing legal case? But it was a not quite the stiff white collar you might expect at Microsoft.
But now, Ewan, have you seen the new Windows Explorer ribbon?
No. Have you got a link?
I posted a link.
You posted a link. Thank you.
Yeah. So the funny thing with the ribbon is that when I first saw the blog post they did showing the new button layout. And like Sarah said, the ribbon obviously comes from Microsoft Office. I think Office 2007 was the first to introduce that ribbon style, where it's a big, tall toolbar, not afraid to use big icons and lots of text. And the buttons are just they're stacked all over each other. It's supposed to be an alternative to menu commands, under the theory that no one ever uses menu commands. And on their blog post, they showed the thought process that went into the new redesign. There it is, the redesign of Windows Explorer, and talking about how they have telemetry data that I guess was automatically connected by collected from users that opted in to let Microsoft capture their clicks.
Their customizations.
Yeah. Well, and they show a graph of the most frequently used Windows Explorer commands, and it's like paste is like 80% of the most used, and then it's like cut, copy, all that stuff. It's like yeah, okay. So they show you the top like the top five commands are like 80% of the top, and it's like, so we've taken that. It's almost like someone like parodying like a bizarro Steve Jobs announcement, because they show you the great thought process that went behind it, and they're like, so we took those ideas and we made this, and they show it, and it's like they've got none of those options up there. They show that everyone uses like four options is the only ever thing they ever do in Explorer, and so they just threw in like 100 other buttons of things like invert selection and who select yeah. none.
Do you know the strange thing about that, guys, is the fact that, I don't know about you, but in Windows Explorer, I don't use any of the menu options.
No.
Invert selection.
You do everything
selection.
By mouse clicks and double clicking on files in the folder, or right mouse click in an empty area or something like that. So
this is where you can defend Microsoft, because if they are working on a tablet UI here, then you're not going to have keyboard shortcuts. So if you're going to copy and paste, normally you just press Control-C, Control-V, and whack something in a new folder. You can't do that on a tablet. You can't have a soft keyboard coming up and doing Control-C. It just wouldn't work. So I think the logic of what they're trying to do is quite sensible. Mm. They're trying to put, you know, copy-paste buttons in, because that's what people use in Explorer. The way they've done it is looking a bit like a car crash. But if, you know, if they just had 10 big buttons for cut, paste, move, send to, whatever, in those, at the top of those windows, I think it would make more sense.
Yeah, I use this ribbon all day at work, because we use SharePoint 2010 at work. And I must admit, I have got used to it, and it's even more different from that in SharePoint than it is in what they're proposing for Windows 8. It does take a bit of getting used to. I also use it in Outlook as well. But I think it's okay. But it is a bit like, why is that one got a big icon? Why is that one not? And so on, so forth.
Paul in the chat room is saying the menu is more important than the user content.
What does that mean?
Well, I'm guessing what he's saying is that the picking an ergonomic menu perhaps is more important than worrying about what the user content's going to be of the customized menus or of the
User content.
Yeah, the document itself, maybe. I mean, I've got to say, when I looked at, because that ribbon thing first appeared in Vista, didn't it?
No, Vista actually removed a lot of features from the Explorer toolbar. That's the one that really shrunk it down to like two buttons.
No, I mean, because I remember I precede Vista as a Windows user. I haven't used Windows properly since pretty much 2000, but this kind of, I saw a Vista PC and I saw the bar in Office across the top, and it was like this in Office 2008.
2007.
Seven, right.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I nearly puked in my mouth. It was, I found it so counterintuitive. I couldn't find things. I didn't know where I was going. And it wasn't just a straight UI change. It was venomously different in terms of productivity for me. And if you sat and looked at that all day, that would, I mean, maybe this is something to do with dyslexia, but, you know, that for me looks like a minefield rather than an intuitive UI.
I can't look at it and get anything done. I mean, if you're just listening to this and you're not looking at this image that we are, they've got the buttons are stacked. You know, a toolbar is supposed to have buttons from left to right in a single row and a single strip. They've got them then stacked. They've got two big ones and then they're a stack of three, two big, a stack of three vertically. It's bizarre. And if you're a Mac user, you don't know what the ribbon is. It's supposed to be this reimagining of, or rather a hybrid combination of the menu, like the file edit view menus, your classic menus, toolbars, and contextual right-click menus, because it's a contextual button toolbar menu replacement kind of weird thing. But I saw someone's report that said it makes perfect sense to have a ribbon like that in a productivity suite like Office, where it has thousands of features that no user ever even knows exists, and you want them to rise to the surface and say, hey, do you want to sort your table by gradient color, you know, these crazy options. People are like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. But people don't want to see that in Windows Explorer. You don't need to go, not everyone's going to go, oh, I didn't know I could copy the path. That's now suddenly useful to me, when before it made no sense. If you're on a network share in a corporation, you can probably right-click to get to that. Same with invert selection. I've never inverted selection in Windows Explorer or the Finder in my life. I've only done that in Photoshop.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Rename is a gigantic button. Like, people don't know how to rename a file. The up button is back. They made a big deal about the up button returning instead of just back and forward, up having been lost with Windows Vista. But they have the document tree, right, or the path tree right there. You don't need an up if you've got every previous folder is clickable to get there. It's crazy.
I mean, is that a cancer of most of the UIs, though, in documents and other kinds of systems? I mean, there's a whole pile of stuff that never, ever filters to the surface that's in there. And unless you go and buy a For Dummies book, or unless you go and buy an Exposed book, Office Exposed 2010, you're never going to find those features anyway. You certainly don't probably use most of them. There was a good example last week on the Mac show. Will Green has found labels in Lion. So basically, you can take a file and you can attach a label to it, and then you can have a smart folder based on the labels. And that smart folder will show you all of those files that you tag with those labels. And I've had a play with it this week, and I can see no end of features for that. But, I mean, I would never go and look for it. I never have thought about it.
You're referring to the colors, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty
old. Oh, God, I love labels. I use labels. That's one of my top Mac reasons of using a Mac, I swear, is labels.
Don't sell Will Green that I thought his pick was cool, though, because me and him have a pile of crap over whether the picks are cool, and he slags mine off and I slag his off. But it was a really damn cool pick. I loved it. But that kind of stuff, what I'm saying is that never filters to the surface unless someone discovers it and there's a big hoo-ha about it's in there.
Well, that's just in the right click menu.
Say, go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I didn't say anything.
Oh, someone was going to say something. Sarah? Was it you?
I was going to say about this that, I mean, obviously I've had using it quite a lot now. And, you know, I think once you get used to it, when you know when things are, it doesn't really make a lot of difference whether you've got traditional menus or whether you've got something like this ribbon. But when you're trying to find things that you don't know, it's actually harder with this method, because when you're looking at a file menu, you've got them in a list. So you just, you open the file menu, you look down the list, you scroll across the next one, look down the list. With this, it's just like, it's a complete mess.
Yeah, it is. It's designed by committee.
I do accept that once you actually know where things are, and you know, I found this now particularly, but I do use it a lot more with SharePoint than I do with anything else. That once you get used to it, yeah, it's great. You know, you just click. It's the same. It's a similar number of clicks. So you just click. You either click on the tab that you want, and then go straight to it, which is the same as clicking on the file menu or the whatever view menu or whatever it is you want to do, and then just go straight to it. But for finding stuff, it is just really not good at all.
Comment from Clora in the chat room: UI stands for ugly interface. I think we may have a title. And Exponent has been saying it's things like this that are going to cause them to fail.
I think that's a bit extreme.
Well, you've got, I mean, can you imagine, let's go, you know, I'm not trying to make this an Apple show, but go back to the Steve Jobs thing. Steve Jobs would never allow that to occur.
Nope.
It would be
threatened. Oh, God, no. I mean, yeah.
It wouldn't be in beta.
Well, I think the thing about Apple, the fact that... Sorry, go ahead, Eric.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say the thing that Apple likes to do is they put in a lot of good power user features and keyboard shortcuts and everything, but they hide them. They hide all their good features. So you do have to read tips and how-to books and magazines and stuff and websites and learn how to do these little things. But I think it's bizarre. Like, what are they thinking when they do the research and say, okay, these are the top 10 buttons, or these are the top 10 commands, whether it's through a menu, a button, a keyboard command that anyone ever uses in Windows Explorer. So let's put all the other crap like invert selection into buttons that are always on the screen, taking up screen real estate with text and a button. And they're stacked on top of each other. And they're in your face and they're saying, click me, discover me, when it's something that no one ever even needs, like Windows Explorer history or rename. It's insane. It's just a bizarre thought process. It's the wrong conclusion based on good data.
We take it you don't like it, Eric.
No, I could do without.
Barry, is that why touch is going to fail ultimately though? Because it's not all the time everywhere.
It will within Windows, I'm afraid, unless they really sort it out very quickly. I think the best hope for Windows 8 is that there's a separate tablet operating system, that the core operating system stays the same and they'll splinter the tablet and you won't get any of this Explorer guff or any of the other stuff we've seen. You'll just get the pure tablet interface and it's almost like a wrapper where it just sits on top of the operating system. You can only install apps in the same way that you can from the App Store. I fear that's not where Microsoft is going. Everything they've said so far seems to suggest they think one operating system should cover laptops, PCs, and tablets. And I think it will bomb very badly if they do that, I'm afraid.
Yep. Do you think, guys, that what do you think about, could this be an indication that what Microsoft really wants is for the kind of people, novice users, people who just don't care, don't want to get in, don't want to learn how to do all those crazies, who would never read a, you know, Windows for Dummies book or a tips and how to, have no enthusiasm over this. The basic, you know, mainstream user. Do you think Microsoft is saying they'll never see this? They're going to stay in the new touch user interface?
Possibly, but I think the issue is who can't use Explorer? If you're using an operating system with a file system like Windows, you've got to, at some point, go into Explorer to see your pictures, to see your music, see your documents. So they can't hide all of it. And from what I've seen so far, it's almost like the current Windows tablets you get, where the manufacturers stick on a splash screen on the top. And it looks great. The splash screen looks fantastic. And then you dive below the surface, and it's just old Windows again. And they don't seem to have got that. It hasn't worked for Windows 7. Windows 7 is nowhere on consumer tablets. It only works in the professional business where they need the apps. But they don't seem to have understood that. They don't know why they're being beaten. And that's really, I really can't understand that, because they're not stupid people. There's a lot of very intelligent people running Microsoft, including Steven Sinofsky, who has got a terrific track record. He revamped Office, whether you like the ribbon or not. He did a terrific job on Windows 7, and I had real hope that he was going to sort this tablet mess out. But he, whether it's coming from above him or not, I don't know. But they got the wrong mindset on the tablet.
I mean, ergonomically though, that's. That menu breaks so many rules in terms of availability, prominence, utilization. It's
consistency. The fact that it changes based on what's highlighted or whatever the mouse is hovering over.
Things should work as people expect. A T-swipe, that's a famous ergonomic principle. And I've got to say, when I first had a go with that style of UI in Office, I was horrified by it. I found it very, very counterintuitive.
It does take a bit of getting used to.
See, I think it works really well in Office. I was a big fan of the ribbon. I think it absolutely transformed Office from a mess. What was becoming a mess was there's too many features whacked in that you can never find, into a very decent product. but I don't think it works right across the board. I think that's the problem with Microsoft. When they think they've got something that works, they try and splash it everywhere. So they've done it with the Ribbon. They've done it with the sort of touch UI they got in Windows Phone 7. It's quite nice. Right, that must work for tablets. Let's get it on tablets. They don't think about everything individually. They just try and reapply interfaces where they're not necessarily suitable.
It's a brute solution. Yeah, splash it all over.
And here's another thought that just occurred to me. Remember, one of the reasons that the Ribbon was so desirable for Office was because with Office, they live and die by the perception that they have features that you can't live without. And when they view statistics and find out that people only ever do new document font and font size, and that's all they ever click in Microsoft Word, then they know that they're going to lose those customers much faster to Google Docs or to OpenOffice or any other competitor than someone who uses all the features. So they want to bubble those features up to the surface and say, hey, look, we've got all these sorting options and table options and embedded web page options and do all this crazy stuff you never knew existed in Office because it's worth buying. Here it is. You bought it. Use it. Whereas with Windows and the basic just core interface that everyone has to use, it's better just to make it simple and just get out of the way. If all people ever do is copy and paste, fine, let them do that. You don't need to tell them that they can invert their selection.
I mean, the other week you were talking about appification of the web and the way that apps are taking over in their own right and they're compartmentalized. The app is taking itself away from the file UI that's provided in the OS to a certain degree. If you look at a lot of the iOS applications, they provide their own file interaction rather than going through something which is a standard OS interaction. They're very much more oriented to letting people choose for themselves or letting the developers choose for themselves how they want to deliver their stuff.
Yeah, if we're following the Apple route down this, then it won't be much longer, I would assume, until we don't ever bother with an Explorer or document folders, etc. It's all just hidden away from us, and it's our apps
we could have
our documents to us.
Go ahead, Eric.
We could have moved to that much faster. I think if you look at what Microsoft has been showing, and even Apple. Microsoft has their libraries function with Windows 7, and they have all these ways in Windows 8. They've even shown in their touch first interface for the tablets, they've shown ways to sort and find your pictures that avoid Windows Explorer and do it directly in the applications themselves. iOS, Apple said, we're not going to have the equivalent of a finder. There will be no file browser. You will only have each app will handle files individually. The weird thing is, Steve Jobs said he wanted that years ago on Mac OS X. He was on stage showing some new version of OS X. It may have been Tiger, or it was way back then, like 10.4 or something. And he was showing off maybe it was Spotlight. It was some new feature. And he said someday people may never use the Finder. They'll just use it in the open and close window, in the file management windows in each application. But then they never did anything to help that. To this day, Apple has never built in the ability to do essential functions like delete a file or rename a file within those application-specific open and save dialog boxes. Microsoft has always had that. If they had that, you would hardly need the Finder. So I think it's odd that Apple has said that and then did sort of the opposite. But I think the future is these smart collections saying that photos, it doesn't matter where a photo is based on what folder you put it in. It matters that a photo is a photo, an MP3 is an MP3, matching the media to the application that can play the media and letting the applications handle the media themselves. I think that is the future. So, yeah, I think they're trying to move towards that a bit.
The only thing is that I actually prefer the Windows Explorer approach. And even on Linux, I use it the same way. In that you've got, instead of having, you've got your pictures here, you've got your videos here, you've got your MP3s here, you've got your Word documents or whatever, and opening that application. If you open Windows Explorer or whatever the Explorer is on the operating system you're using, you double click on that and it opens the application, so you can get to everything from one place. And that's where I think it really works.
Comments in the chat room, at least they were smart enough back then to notice and kill it off with WinFS. And I see a lot of routing coming from Windows 8 tablets and phones. There was actually an article today that was talking about the fact that the success of the tablet is based on the fact of its ability for being crackable. And once they start trying to stop tablets being crackable and running different OSs and functioning systems, they reckon that people will lose interest in them, which was quite interesting.
That's only a small percentage of the market that are going to be doing that. Most people use it with what it comes with, won't they?
I mean, it'd be interesting to see how many people have used Cydia and stuff like that for cracking iPhone and then iPad. Have we got... Oh, go on, sorry.
I was just going to say, I bet you'll find that's only a very small percentage of the actual users.
Mm.
Yeah.
Have we got any cool thingies? Barry, do you have a cool thing for us?
It's a bit sad, but this week I saw a Windows Home server for the first time in a long while. And these were sort of great ideas about 2 years ago, where you just have a device that would sit on your next to your router, back up all your PCs, you know, they had to share data across all of your PCs and consoles, whatever. And they've sort of died a death. And this week we saw one from a company called Tranquil, who got like a 4-bay Windows Home server. So you slot in a few disks and just everything works seamlessly. The whole thing, you know, it just, there's a client that runs on your PC. It backs up all your PCs. You can share your data. There's lots of really nice streaming options. So if you've got video stored on your PC, it automatically converts that into a format and bitrate that's suitable for your phone. So if you're out and about, you can, say, record a show off the television if you've got it connected up to a media center and then stream it to your phone. So lots of really nice features like that. The only problem with the Tranquil one is that it costs £700 with only 2 terabytes of storage. Ooh. So it's horribly expensive. And it's just a shame because Windows Home Server is a great idea, I think. But the price of these things is huge.
Was it just the restrictions as well that kind of killed off Home Server? Because there was an awful lot of restrictions for it that were the linkages to it, the interaction with... your Xbox had to be with a Windows Home Server PC. You couldn't link in if you got even the standard premium stuff. You had to wear the Windows Media and Windows Home Server editions, didn't you?
Yeah, there was a bit of tie-in. But I think it certainly works for the Xbox. I think it works for the PlayStation 3 as well. So I think they overcome some of that. The bad thing, they used to have just automatic... you used to be able to just whack in an extra hard disk and it would just treat it all as one pool of storage and everything would be duplicated automatically. So if one disk failed, it would fall over onto the other one. And then for some reason, Microsoft decided those features were wrong. I know they had some problems with the file duplication at one point, and I think it may be a technical problem that they just couldn't solve. Mm. But it's a shame because that was a really nice feature, just to be able to, you know, oh, my network's running a bit low on storage, just throw in another drive. And there are ways around that with a Tranquil device, but like I say, £700 just puts it out of reach for pretty much everybody, I'm afraid.
I was going to say, there's a few exclamations in the chat room, once put 7,000 yeah, quid, but no, it's 700.
It's not that expensive.
700 for 2 terabytes of storage. Let me think.
Yeah, it's not right.
you could do a bit better than that. Yes. Mike, have you got a cool thing for us?
Yeah, it's a music album I'm going to pick this week. There's a guy called Jonathan Colton, who's an artist who was made famous by doing stuff online, and he's kind of a bit of a hero in the geek space. And he released a new album yesterday called Artificial Heart. This is an album he's actually produced in a studio with a full band and stuff, as opposed to just doing it on his own sort of at home. It came out yesterday, which you can buy online. You can only get it from his website, which is jonathancolton.com. And it's going to be out in iTunes and on Spotify and stuff probably within the next week or so. It's one of those sort of models where you can either buy a digital download or you can pay more and get loads of merchandise and stuff with it. I've been listening to the album over the last day, and I've been really enjoying it. Good pop music.
Didn't he get famous for the fact he wrote one of the end tunes for a video game or something?
He wrote both end songs for both Portal games.
Right. Aye, we've lost Mike.
He was known before, but they're really locked in mainstream. Oh, can you hear me, mate?
Yeah, you're a bit stuttery. But...
Yeah, he wrote songs for both Portal games. I'll let you move on.
Okay, mate. Thank you very much. Sarah, have you actually got a cool thing for us?
I haven't, unfortunately.
Oh, because we got you so late. That's fair enough. And Eric, anything? Oh, you do.
Just kidding.
Should have known better. Nothing at all.
Nope.
I love the fact of how seriously you take this show. Thanks, mate.
Well, okay, then.
If only we could match that.
Wait, right there. Wait. I can't hear you. One second.
There you go. This is good video and audio, dude.
Are you there? I can't hear you. Hello?
Yeah, I got you.
Are you there? Okay, look, so, okay, you want to know why I never have cool things? It's not just that I don't...
Because you're a lazy bastard.
It's also that I don't like many things. This is the Countryman Isomax that
I
tried.
Is that a USB?
No. It's a traditional microphone, but it's a headset mic. And I've been trying to improve my audio. And also, you always see me struggling around with this mic. I hate this. I want to find a head-mounted solution that looks good on camera. And then recommend it to all podcasters because I don't like the way that we have to deal with these mics and they make noise and all this stuff. So here's this thing, and it just sounds terrible. And I'm going to take it back. I can do that, fortunately, with no restocking fee. It was like $400. I got it because of that. I could just test it out. It just sounds awful. I don't know what else to say. So I was hoping that this could be like a really cool thing that I could say, oh, this is the great new thing everyone should get. No, it sucks.
That's why
I don't have a cool thingy this week,
Could you link it up for us while I'm doing the sponsors and we could hear what it sounds like? Tell us just how bad it is.
Yeah.
I'll do that. Okay. My cool thing is Aldi supermarkets in the UK. They're brilliant. I've got some great stuff from them. And this little tool set is a precision tool set from Aldi. And I used it to sit and do some stuff with my MacBook and put a new, what's it in the other way, SSD in it. And it was £10. And it comes with a really cool little screwdriver. But what's kind of cool is like most precision sets, you get one screwdriver for each fitting. This one's got a little socket on it, and then you've got a little row of precision sets there. And it's got torque down to T4, which is you can't buy in most places. And it's also got a hex nut down to 0.07 of a millimeter. So if you're into pulling your PC apart and that kind of stuff, and it's also got a little curvy thing, look, that lets you screw round corners, unquote, and a pair of tweezers. And just to finish it off, a magnifying glass. There we go. Perfect.
Yeah, those tweezers look pretty good as well.
The tweezers are excellent. They're really, really good. Really nice little
set of
tweezers. They're
really pointy tweezers.
And they've got a little magnetism thingy on them as well, so they pick things up really easy. And the little set of clippers. And it was £10. So there you go.
Those little sets worth their weight in gold.
Awesome.
Every time in the office, we're trying to undo a laptop, and the screws they put on the things these days, they're tiny. It's like the Hobbit designed them. Yeah. It's incredible. So we're always struggling to find those really tiny little screwdrivers. We have to go down to the IT department, and they sort of laugh at us because we're the PC magazine coming to them to get stuff.
I've got a similar sort of thing that I bought years ago, and I've still got it, and I carry it around with me whenever I go and do PCs. It cost me quite a lot of money, but it was worth its weight in gold. And I do look after it to make sure that I don't lose anything or nothing gets nicked or anything like that. They are very useful.
I got two aluminium tripods from there the other day for stuff that I just wanted to shoot light stuff on. I didn't need my big heavy tripod, which weighs a bloody ton. And these things were dirt cheap, £12, super lightweight, really sturdy. And they came with a field carrying bag as well. Really, really good. That was a tenner. And I got myself a bag specifically for carrying some stuff in, some speakers in for when I'm away from home on the road. And that cost me a tenner. Aldi. Fantastic German firm. Go and use them. Our sponsors get the last word, of course. They are UK2.net. They are the people that keep us afloat. They give us all our bandwidth. You can help us by helping them. That's the key part. If you could, please go to our website. And when you go there, you'll see the website pop up. Scroll yourself down to where you see the logo for UK2.net. Click on that, and that'll take you through to their website. And they'll know that we've sent you. So you'll get credit to us. And even if you just want to sign into your account, that's fine. Use the click through on our website. Come up here and do account login, and you can sign straight in. If you want to buy anything, though, we can give you a really good deal for them. First thing is, if you want to buy co-location services, VPS servers, that kind of stuff, then go ahead. When you get to the end, check out with BagelTech as the offer code, all one word, and you'll get 15% off your order. It'll look absolutely fantastic. If you want to try and move stuff in for hosting, so you want to take your domain and move it over, then you need a different code because they do a DNS management charge. But BagelTech listeners don't have to pay that. So type in Bagel DNS and that should take your DNS management charge off. So there you go. UK2.net, our hosts, our sponsors, and the people we love the most. We really would be lost without, and they picked up a huge amount of bandwidth. And a couple of weeks ago, we had Andy and Natco on the Mac show, and we had more than a few downloads of that one. Thank God we didn't do it on video, otherwise I think we'd have fallen over. But please look after them. They look after us. And if you do want to support the network, you can also buy T-shirts from us. And every T-shirt that's sold, we get £5 on it. They're not cheap T-shirts, but they are really good quality. And we've got a whole pile of slogans that you can have on them. If you want a custom slogan, I can add it to the shop. So send me through what you want it to say, and I'll get it added up, and then you can order it. And you can have whatever logo you want on them. There's cups and mugs and that kind of stuff. We make £2 on the mugs. And it helps pay for all the equipment. So thank you very much. We don't make a penny out of advertising or anything on BagelTech, so you really are supporting the network. Thank you if you do support our sponsors. Eric, how's that lovely, lovely headset mic?
You tell me. How's it sound?
Does it sound, dude. Oh, wow.
Sound like you've got a cold, Eric.
Yeah, so this is the amazing sound of the Countryman IsoMax. As you can hear, the treble is very like crunchy, like crispy, like it sounds just totally bizarre, and it's extremely susceptible to breath pops. Let me see if I even, you know, it's also it's incredibly uncomfortable. It's very hard to put in the right spot. It's just way too thin sounding, and even when I play with the EQ, the absolute deal breaker is that the treble just sounds so odd. I've never heard treble sound this way on any microphone, so this is going back.
Every time you shake your head, you're hearing it as well. No, that is an awful piece of kit.
Oh, wait, yeah, you hear the handling noise too?
Yeah, when you wobble your head around, you can hear it as well.
The fact that you can't bend the stem coming round doesn't help as well.
Well, that would really help you. That would really ruin your puff as well. That would make it worse, yeah, by far. If it's already susceptible to that, then the last thing you want is that in front of it. Mm. A god awful. You'll have to send us a link so we can post it as to where to avoid it. Some show notes of it.
Well, it's the IsoMax. So Countryman makes a number of microphones. I'm going to try one of their other ones. I've used the E6 in the past. That sounds much better. So just out of curiosity, I might try that. I might also try their little lavalier that they claim is like super amazing. Just to see, because you know, I don't. This doesn't scale. I don't think this is going to be around forever. I want to find some better audio for podcasts and stuff. So I have one to avoid.
Yeah, no, good. We used to do a thing when we first started. We used to do the pick of the week, and then we also did the pass of the week. So you had something that you'd like to pass on. So there you go. There's your pass of the week. The IMAX. You have to write us a review, mate, and we'll put it up with a warning. One bagel. On the review, so right. Where can we get a hold of you? Just to finish off, Barry.
At pcpro.co.uk, or ideally in that lovely newsagent's place down the road where we sell magazines.
Go down there, buy it. Second week in September, it's all yours.
Indeed.
Lovely, mate. Thank you. And I'm in it this month.
You are. That's right.
Ha ha. It's worth buying just for that. Yeah, I'm in it. I want to find out which picture you used as well.
We didn't want to scare off the readers, Ewan.
Oh, sorry, mate. And Mike, where can we get you, mate?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at iMike, which is IMYKE, and at thepodcastingproject.com.
Do, mate. Tell your brother to move out as fast as possible and get yourself on a wired connection, because you are all over the place, mate.
I do not know what's happened to me this evening. I apologise.
I'm not worried. Don't worry. We've had worse problems here. It's not a problem. Sarah, where can we get you, mate?
You can get hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk, yes.
And finally, Leisure Boy Lanigan, where can we get you, pal?
ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan, ericlanigan.
Do you have a restart date for Tech Talkback yet or not?
No, but I'm going to, I need to do another set of training. They just have a lot of new equipment, so I'm going to do that tonight. I think probably also tomorrow. And then we've got to talk times and logistics of it. But it looks like it will be coming back soon.
Good, good. We'd like to see it. I miss watching you getting ripped to pieces by the chat room. We'll be back again next week. We're also going to be back in the morning with The Daily Show. And, of course, we're going to be here with The Max Show at 1 o'clock and The Photo Show at 3 o'clock. And if you can, please vote for us. If you go to our website, we're up for a European Podcast Award. The shows that are nominated are The Max Show, The News Show, The Photo Show and The Big Show. Go to our homepage, bageltechnews.com. Click on the logo. It takes you through to a place where you have to give us stars for content and for layout. And then you vote. I'm not telling you what to vote, but please go in there and vote if you possibly can. It's not iOS friendly, though. The site that you've got is Flash-based that they're doing the advertising on, so I'm afraid you can't go there with your iPhone or your iPad. But please, please, please vote for us as much as you can, because I think we should win. There you go.
I would contest that, but whatever.
Good man, thank you. Can anyone write a bit of script that'll just constantly vote for us? Regular basis, that would help. Just set it running in the morning, 100,000 votes per day. If anyone's got that, please send it through. See you next week. Thanks very much.